This is On Location. I'm Tim Leitner. Today's episode comes to you from Virginia, Ohio, and Wisconsin. But first, On Location is produced by the NCO Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, Breaker, iHeartRadio, and Radio Public, among others. So subscribe today on your favorite podcast service and tell all your friends. This week's episode of On Location comes from Virginia and two famous football cities, Canton, Ohio, and Green Bay, Wisconsin. Our guests discuss the National Child Support Non-Custodial Parent Employment Demonstration Program grants, better known as CSPED, and the upcoming Next Generation Grant Forecast. Join Mary Ellen Keeley with the Virginia Child Support Program as she hosts Ann Durkin, Deputy Director of Stark County, Ohio Child Support, and Marie Lasecki, the Director of Brown County and Oconto County Child Support in Wisconsin. These project directors share challenges and successes and the importance of celebrating along the way. They also talk about how they got started in the child support program and what captured their interest. It's going to be a great show, so stick around, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to another episode of NCIA On Location, coming to you from Ohio, Wisconsin, and Virginia. Today, we're pleased to have several guests. My name is Mary Ellen Keeley with Virginia Child Support, and I'm in Crozet, Virginia. I'll let our two guests introduce themselves. Ann, would you go first?
Sure. I'm Ann Durkin, and I'm the Deputy Director of Child Support at Stark County Child Support. That's a part of Stark County Job and Family Services. We're located in Canton, Ohio, which you may have heard of before. That's the Hall of Fame city, Pro Football Hall of Fame city. And we're about an hour south of Cleveland, so we're in Northeast Ohio.
Can you tell us a little bit about what other roles you may have held in child support, how you got started, kind of what got you interested in working in the program?
Sure. So I actually got started working in child support back in 2014 on the CSPED project. I came on as the project manager, and I had been reached out to by our former director, Rob Pearson. I've worked at Job and Family Services for going on 23 years. I was previously in our children's services and then in our administration areas. And Rob had seen some of my work on other projects that were more agency-wide. And he said, you know, I'd like to talk to you about coming over to child support. And I said, I don't know anything about child support, Rob. I don't know if this is a good fit. He said, no, I know what you've done on different projects, and I think that we could really use your skills. So he's like, you can learn the child support part. And I'm like, okay. So I came over, and so my first introduction to child support was through CSPED. Locally, we called it Right Path for Fathers. And it was really a great experience. I'm excited to talk more about it as we go through our conversation today. But then from that project, I moved on to our next grant project, which was the PJAC grant. So we were able to transition a lot of services directly from CSPED into PJAC. And then from there, when Rob retired, I replaced him last year. So just got done with my first year of being the director here at Child Support.
Well, congratulations. That's certainly something to celebrate. I didn't even realize when I asked you to join the podcast today that CSPED was your beginning of child support. That's fun. How about you, Maria? Introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Maria Lasecki. I have the distinct honor and pleasure of being the director of the Brown County Child Support Agency, which is in Green Bay, Wisconsin, home of the Green Bay Packers, of course. I'm also privileged to be able, and I'm today, I'm in Oconto County. I'm also serving as the director in Oconto for child support. So that's about 30 miles north of Green Bay. And it's unique in that Brown County is an extra large county and Oconto is a medium-sized county. So we're learning from one another about the very distinct differences between the two.
So beyond your current role in child support, what other roles have you had? How'd you get started? What made you interested in working in the program?
Sure. I've been lucky to be an employee of our county for 33 years. For clarification, I was hired when I was 2, just because it seems like such a long time, but it's gone by so fast. I started in income maintenance and I spent 15 years there learning all about economic support and then later all the various facets of a human services department and moving up into management. And then I had something happened in our county. There was a unfortunate situation out at the zoo and I thought maybe I could help. So I went out there for 5 years as the operations manager and learned all things business related, which helped a great deal when I assumed the position of director in child support because I understood budgets and, you know, the business aspect, the financial piece of it. So I've been with child support for 12 years. I too went my first, right as I got my feet wet, we had the opportunity to embark upon CSPED, which in Brown County we called Supporting Parents, Supporting Kids. And it was just a wonderful beginning because I didn't know anything different. I had come from economic support and had dabbled in the employment and training piece of it and only knew, you know, how to provide services with resources and assistance, as well as partnerships and referrals. So it was really a nice way to begin and to look at, you know, things from in child support from a real innovative perspective. So I was fortunate to have that background. But yeah, thank you.
So I always love to hear how people ended up at child support. And all the people that I've interviewed, I don't think that anyone ever took a path through the zoo before. So that is new. I will have to add that to my list of things. You know, and my story is very similar. When I interviewed at child support, my first question was, what is it that you people do here? And so I love now being able to speak on this national platform and work on the grants team in Virginia. Be like, you know, 20 years ago, I didn't even know that this existed. It's really interesting how many people that is their story. They're like, what is that thing again? And here we all are 20 years later. And how did all that time start? So as both the guests mentioned, and I did at the beginning, and the title of the podcast suggests, we're going to talk about one of the previous federal demonstration grants, CSPED. The Federal Office of Child Support launched the National Child Support Non-Custodial Parent Employment Demonstration in 2012 to test the efficacy of child support-led employment strategies. The goal was to increase reliable child support payments among non-custodial parents who are unable to pay support. Through a competitive grant application process, 8 state child support programs were selected to participate in the 5-year demonstration from October 2012 to September 2017. The 8 states were California, Colorado, Iowa, Ohio, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Wisconsin. And we're fortunate to have 2 of those states represented on the podcast today. So the first thing, you both gave me the titles of your projects. I would love to hear kind of your elevator speech, quickly overview of what your project was about. Maria, will you go first?
Sure. So really, Brown County and Wisconsin, we were one site, and there was another site south of us in Kenosha. We collaboratively delivered these services together and really learned from one another. But it was a grassroots effort. It was we endeavored to change the perception of the program and to gain the trust of non-custodial parents who we realized very early on were going to be hesitant to trust us enough to take up services. That was probably the biggest obstacle we ran into in, you know, really how we ended up defining success. But we needed to get to root cause for why wasn't there remittance, right? So were these non-custodial parents willing and able And that was going to be an easy fix. Just connect them to resources and services. Or were they willing and unable? So, okay, tougher. Why were they unable and what did we need to solve for? Or conversely, were they unwilling and able or unwilling and unable? So there were all of those things. There were those four very distinct facets of problem identification and resolution that we needed to solve for. And that's really how we drove the ship. It was wonderful. We learned so much. Probably the hardest thing I will ever do and our agency will ever do. We reinvented wheels. We had to change out wheels. Sometimes there were days that we problem solved 3, 4, and 5 times the very same problem, but trying to get to a compelling resolution that worked for our staff and worked for the NCPs that we served, and really overcame some of the obstacles we never anticipated. But it was wonderful. As you can tell, it'll be the highlight of my years in working. And it's still today. We're still delivering employment and training services along with parenting assistance. And I just don't know that we could ever go back. It's wonderful.
That wheel inventing, changing, turning upside down is my favorite part about grant work as well, where you think you've got it figured out and then you have to reinvent it all. So Anne, would you tell us a little bit about your project?
I would say it's very similar to what Maria explained, but of course we were a little different. Each site in the project was a little different. In Ohio, Stark County was the only county that was participating in the CSPED grant. So we were a single county site. And we're considered a large county, but not a metro county. So we had a small team. We had a pretty challenging time trying to enroll enough people for our evaluation study because we had a small team. And Maria, you know, kind of mentioned that perception of our customers, and the non-custodial parents did not want to work with us. And so it took a lot of effort. And, you know, we did random assignment for the project, and it required the participants to come in. So we had to recruit them, like, hey, come in. We really want to talk to you about this program. You have a 50-50 shot of getting in. And the people that we really hyped up and they were like, yes, I really need this, then they would maybe get put into that control group and didn't get to participate in the services that we had provided. So what our services looked like were employment services for our non-custodial parents. We partnered with 2 local organizations with a proven track record of working with people to find employment. That was our Goodwill and our Community Action Agency. And then we also had a component that was a fatherhood component that was a partnership with the Early Childhood Resource. After somebody was randomly assigned into the program, we would put them into a cohort and they'd be assigned at one of the 2 sites. And they would go to class 5 days a week, 2 hours a day for 4 weeks. So it was pretty intense. So 3 of those days would be employment focused and 2 of those days would be fatherhood focused. And over time, we noticed that we had a population of non-custodial parent mothers who were also participating with us. So our facilitators for the fatherhood piece were actually able to kind of pivot and make that more of a parenting component more than a fatherhood component. And really the curriculum was really great. It was the 24/7 dads curriculum, if anybody's familiar with that. A lot of communication. And it was really great to kind of have those non-custodial parent moms in the class with the dads to kind of give a different perspective. And the facilitators always really enjoyed that, just to kind of have some really great dialogue in those classes. So after that 4-week class, participants would come back once a week for job readiness, job coaching, until they would find employment. And then If they lost employment, they could also go back and get some more assistance along the way. So we worked with a lot of people that had a lot of barriers to employment. So that was something that we had to try to identify, you know, what services could we refer you to? We worked in partnership with our community legal aid to try to help with criminal record expungement. And that was a big barrier that a lot of our participants had was, I can't get employed because I have a criminal history. So that was something that was pretty interesting along the way. I think that's probably it in a nutshell. I think we'll dive into some other topics as we go along in our conversation.
That's really interesting, that intense training program. I may have some offline questions for you about that with my own grant work and human research studies. But so two questions. I mean, all of this is from a project management perspective, but when you were laying out the planning or whatever point in the planning phases that you joined in, and what were you most excited about? Like before you started the project and you're like, the sky's the limit, what was the thing that you were hoping would be the most successful?
I mean, I think with it being an employment project, we were looking at success like, yeah, we're going to get people employed. We're going to get people to jobs. And that's going to be the most exciting thing, is helping people get from unemployed to employed and then employed to making payments on their child support case. That was probably like, yeah, we're going to be excited about that. But I really think that the most exciting piece for me after I got into the project was seeing our participants meet their goals and accomplish things. The one thing that we did at the end of each cohort, we had a graduation celebration. And we would allow the participants to bring their important people, so their kids, their partners, whoever, to come to the graduation celebration. That was pretty simple, you know, pizza and pop, maybe some chicken and JoJo's or something like that, if, you know, if it was really a special day, we had a lot of people. But one of the things that was really touching was we passed out certificates of completion. Like, hey, you graduated. This is a big deal. You've taken this action. You've come here for 4 weeks. You've done it. Now you can do your next thing. And I think that was the most exciting thing, is how the people in the class reacted to that. So many of them said, I've never graduated from anything. This is the first certificate that I've ever gotten, or I was so proud to take this home and show my kids. And that's like what I always looked forward to then, was like, I really want to be there on graduation day. I go on the first day, I want to see who's coming to class. But the exciting part is the empowerment that people felt after they got through that class, and the excitement of what was next and what they accomplished.
That makes sense. Maria, how about you? What were you most excited about in the planning phase of the project?
And it changed. What we thought we were going to be most excited about as the work went on really, really changed over time. So in the planning phase, it was a solution to how to improve performance, a way to be able to help individuals who already knew they weren't remitting, but it was the helping hand versus the heavy hand of being able to, you know, assist in solving problems that the folks we were serving couldn't maybe on their own. But, you know, as Anne indicated, and the grant, the work that we did, you know, went on, it really was those wins, those personal success stories. For me as a leader, watching my staff rally around that, and one gentleman who was an NCP, we too had, the cohort curriculum model, but ours was a 2-week process, and it was employment in the morning and parenting in the afternoon. We lost people for the parenting class. They would leave for lunch and never come back. So we rallied around and brought out our slow cookers and microwaves and served lunch, and they stayed. And that excited us, because now we had folks staying through the entire curriculum. But one gentleman, trusted us, the trust, you know, formed over that period of time, and shared that he hadn't seen his children in 7 years. And at the end of the curriculum, staff found out that his son was playing in a football game and his daughter was going to that homecoming, and she didn't have a dress. So he reconnected with his son, and we got a dress and a corsage and helped her out for the homecoming dance. And, you know, just watching everybody cry, you know, because he was back with his children. You know, it was those stories that when we didn't get responses to our outreach and invites to enroll, or when we had to tell people who were devastated that they were in the control group and they weren't going to get services, we had to remember, you know, the gentleman that I share, and you know, there were so many other success stories. But again, what excited us was I think was the relationships and the change in the ability for us to have an opportunity to have dialogue with folks that just didn't even want to hear from us before. That same individual told us, you know what, Maria, I used to run from your agency and now I run to it. You know, that gets me up in the morning still to this day.
For sure. I usually warn my guests beforehand, like, if you're going to tell stories, they're going to make us cry, we should wait until the end so that we can actually get through the rest of the questions. So we also collect ourselves here. I'll stay with you, Maria. What were you most worried about? What did you think might not work?
I think it's fair to say that I knew we didn't know what we didn't know, and that scared me. I, in hindsight, no truer words were spoken. What worried me too was I had amazing veteran staff who were experts at what they did, and I was turning everything upside down by saying, we're getting out of our lane and we're gonna do something we need a waiver to do, and we're gonna do this. And it wasn't that what they were doing was wrong. I think it was embracing and helping folks understand that this was just a different way to approach the important work that the program is responsible for. But it worried me that, you know, change, that most people are afraid of it. And we changed everything with this demonstration. It really, you know, I talk about how it changed us almost at a molecular level. Because we started asking questions we never really even had the time or the chance to ask. So it scared me that would scare people away. But, you know, nothing worthwhile is ever easy. And it's okay to be a little scared. And, you know, that needs to fuel your fire and not make you run in the opposite direction. So something as complex as enforcement, when you know it inside and out, asking people to do it differently than they ever knew, I knew was scary. And that kept me up at night. But boy, was it worthwhile.
Yeah, change management is not something that child support is great at. That's not any huge secret from anyone. So it's extra challenging in this grant work when we ask people to take things they used to know how they've always done and ask them to turn it upside down. So, but the outcomes are always worth it. How about you, Anne? What were you most worried about?
I think when we got into the grant and we were continuously looking at measures, how many people are we going to enroll? And when we started off and we're like, well, we have this population of people that we have a goal to enroll. This was a bad month, but next month we're going to get them because we feel some momentum. And then it kept getting a little bit further away from us and a little further away from us. And it was a bit challenging. So that was something that I was worried about. Are we going to meet our goal? Because this is such a great project. This is such good work. My staff is doing amazing things, but if we don't meet our goals, are we going to get, you know, specific information that tells a story of what we're doing? Because we know that leads to process change and that leads to maybe funding or things like that down the road. So that was something that we worried about. I think that recruitment continued to be an issue for us. Getting people in, we worried about, you know, are we going to be bombarding people with, hey, come in. Are they going to be like, I don't want, I mean, most of them, like Maria said, most of them were like, I don't want to come to your office. If I come to your office, you're going to arrest me and I don't want to come there. So, you know, we were constantly kind of worried about like, what is the perception? We felt like the work that we were doing was great. And, you know, looking back, I still think it was awesome. But it was challenging in the moment. And I think we worried about, you know, are we doing the right thing? Can we continue to do this? We had to get all of our partners on board with this change, including our court system. And they were great partners, but, you know, we didn't want to disappoint them either. So those were probably the things that kept me up at night sometimes.
So we won't dwell on the negative long at all, because the next thing I'd like to know is, what were you hoping to accomplish? How did you define success of your project?
I think, you know, Maria said it, where we looked at little wins and it just kept building. So I think, you know, we tried to meet our goals. That evolved into some sub goals, like how many people can we recruit? How many people showed up for their intake once we recruited them? How many people showed up on the first day of class? How many people were there on the last day of class that started the class? So then from there, did they get employed? Did they retain that employment? Did they make a payment? Did we see them make consistent payments for 30, 60, 90 days, then on to 6 months, on to a year? So I think we defined success multiple ways along the way with these little wins. And we tried to celebrate those little wins all the time. But I think overall, we looked at success a little differently too, because sometimes it was a matter of just having a conversation with somebody, building that trust, changing perspectives or perceptions of what we did in our office. And that was a huge, huge success that isn't easily measured, but we did a lot of work on that and it was very cool.
How about you, Maria?
Sure, that, you know, like before, it evolved over the course of the grant. But it, you know, we really thought we were going to, it was going to be the fix to our performance measures, you know, ensuring that we achieved regular and consistent remittance 100% of the time, and, you know, reconnected parents with children, and, you know, or eliminated the animosity that there was with the agency. And I think to some degree we did that. But, you know, to Anne's point, the successes were in solving homelessness situations, connecting individuals who needed AODA assistance with medical assistance so that they could get the help that they needed. Solving transportation related issues, getting, you know, helping folks with work supports, managing employment, you know, scenarios that where there were anger management issues and we could have a case manager go in and intervene and salvage jobs, you know, helping folks with food and to connect to, you know, food resources and pantries and faith-based organizations and goodness, legal services and even Social Security and starting the disability process or connecting them to the Aging and Disability Resource Center so they could have help in getting through that web, that complex process, so, you know, of what sometimes amounted to multiple denials. You know, it was so much more than just regular and consistent child support remittance. It was solving basic need issues. Because what I realized was, and we did as a team, was that we were serving a population that had never asked for or received help in the past and really didn't know how to go about doing that. And even when it was offered, it was hesitant to be received. And I learned that. I learned that this is a population that had not been connected to. And I think that's what is so remarkable as I look back at the grant, is that we were serving probably one of the most underserved groups of people that really existed. And I didn't even really realize it. So that was that's still kind of revelational to me today.
So you both hinted at this several times throughout our conversation today, but I'm curious about what happened to the project or the pieces of the project after the grant period had expired.
We're still delivering services in Wisconsin, thank goodness. I work for a great state and we have incredible leadership, and they heard us and they saw the work that was done. And we had a no cost to continue grant or period immediately following, CSPED. And then the state stepped in with funding for not only Brown and Kenosha to continue, but we added three other counties and continued on with another demonstration. It was originally called a 5-county demonstration project, but Brown had referred to their no cost to continue period as the acronym ELEVATE, for empowering lives through education, vocational assessment, training, and employment. And that was adopted. So we are now in Wisconsin delivering the ELEVATE program through employment and parenting services. So we didn't have to dial back. We amped up, and the next iteration hopefully will expand this to at least one other county, and we'll be able to continue to learn and grow. I'm fortunate in that I've taken on these duties now a little bit north of my home county, and we're looking at it as a sister county and expanding service delivery and expanding partnerships with community resource agencies. And it's a effort that continues. So I'm really fortunate, and I know it.
That's awesome. So many of these things don't find funding after the federal funding goes away, and to still be talking about something, 12 years after the fact, is that it's still growing, is really incredible. How about you, Anne?
Well, we continued as well. So we were able to operate under the no-cost extension. And then shortly after that, we were able to secure some funding from the Sisters of Charity, who actually were the funding agents of our parenting program. So they were very passionate about us including that, continuing that fatherhood programming through our project. And so we kind of evolved along the way, where we entered into a couple other grant projects. I mentioned PJAC. We also were involved in BEES, although that was just for a short time. But we were able to continue the work of CSPED and then kind of evolve it into these other projects. So we still are offering services, employment services through child support, operating under a waiver through PJAC. But it's been really great. And, over time, things have changed a bit in our community. When we first started CSPED, we were really depressed in Stark County. Unemployment was high. The job market was very challenging. It was mostly customer service-based employment. A lot of our industries, we're kind of like Rust Belt location here. A lot of our industry and our community had left. And so there weren't a lot of those great opportunities, some of those labor jobs we used to have, a lot of steel mills and factory jobs like that. A lot of them had left our community. And so a lot of people who had barriers to employment really struggled to get employed. And over time, more industry has come into our community, and our situation outside right now is far different than it was back in 2013, 2014, 2015, where we have individuals who have barriers that employers are like, that's okay. We'll work with that. You have a criminal history. It's all right. Come in. We've waived requirements for drug testing or for criminal history or anything like that, educational requirements. So it's a little different terrain to navigate right now But there were challenges along the way, but we're excited to continue to do it.
So speaking of continuing that work, those of our listeners who listen to the rest of my podcast episodes know that I manage grants in Virginia and am constantly sharing information from our state and other states about the work that we're doing and the federal demonstration grant funding we're using to do that. Part of the reason I wanted to get you guys together today is that there is a new forecast for a federal demonstration grant, looking to follow up on what you guys did with CSPED. It's called the Next Generation Child Support Employment Services Demonstration, and its goal is to expand and enhance child support-led employment services for non-custodial parents. Very familiar what you guys already did. I will make sure that the link to that forecast is in the show notes. But if you were going to give advice to states that might be potentially looking at that announcement and thinking about whether or not they want to apply, what would you want to tell them?
Don't hesitate.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Just do it, right? Can we say that without trademarking it? Just do it.
And okay. I think you'd agree. It's a lot of work. I mean, I'm not going to deny that. Ann mentioned it. I'm right behind it. There were sleepless nights about some of the things that I didn't think, I thought would be easy. I thought everybody was going to want this. I had no idea I would have staff in tears when they had to tell somebody they couldn't help them. You know, keeping everybody lifted up was my responsibility. The grant, as I look back at it, was like a permission slip to be creative. It was like a free pass to do what you need to do to be successful in the best interest of those you serve. And I don't know why we needed a free pass. I needed one, but I needed the permission slip, and we took it and ran with it. And we learned so much more than what we taught anybody. And that came from so many different places, from colleagues, from OCSS representatives, from the evaluation team, from participants, so much from participants, from ourselves. We learned from our mistakes, and it was okay. It was that free pass to make mistakes and for it to be okay. So nothing worthwhile is ever easy, and it's going to be a lot to even write the grant, but do it, because you will be changed in a way that will be so profound that it's so worth it.
I would definitely echo everything that you just said. I think that it is a lot of work, but it's so worth it. And you are so supported by the federal office team, your grants team, your evaluation team, and just my team here. We formed a bond that was that still exists. You know, I mean, it's like, oh, remember when we did this? We bonded with our community partners. I guess if I could offer any advice, it'd be try to find the right people for your team. That's where you're going to have the best results. And I don't think it's wrong to say that not everybody's built for this kind of work. Engaging with people who have challenges to employment and asking them those tough questions, you know, what's going on with you? Why aren't you working? That can be a really hard conversation. Why are you having barriers to seeing your child? Or, what kind of history of domestic violence do you have? Those are really hard conversations, and not everybody feels comfortable. Even just, you know, calling people and talking to them on the phone. I have a lot of workers who are like, I don't want to call anybody. And others who are like, please let me talk your ear off. So, finding the right team for you and then trying to figure out what works. We had awesome community partners, and trying to figure out how to best communicate with them to understand our program, because child support is a foreign language to everybody. And they want to support us as much as they can. But we had to educate them as much as we had to educate ourselves and our customers. So, you know, find your right team and go for it, because it'll be totally worth it.
That's fantastic. I'm ready to write my application right now. So I'm really fortunate to work on a team of readers. We are all avid readers. And so whenever I interview folks in a podcast and I'm starting to do my wrap up, I like to borrow a question from Brené Brown's podcast and asking the question of what's on your nightstand right now. So what I'm asking is what are you reading? Let me pull out the Goodreads app so I can add it in. Okay.
I have one that I'm reading right now. It's called Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far. And I just finished a series of graphic novels by Sarah Anderson. And they were really quick reads, but super fun. And I think everybody would enjoy them. I was not into graphic novels for a long time. And then I read a couple and I'm like, these are great. I thought they were all just like superhero stuff. And then I've read several on mental health and several on just, you know, being a woman. And it's like, wow, I didn't know that that genre existed, but I enjoy it.
Very cool. Yeah, I second Lessons in Chemistry. That was one of my favorite reads last year. How about you, Maria?
I can't lie. The only thing on my nightstand right now is my alarm clock. I'm not even gonna try. I think for me, everything going on right now, I go full throttle until my head hits the pillow, and that is the truth. So I'm hoping that things lighten a little bit as spring approaches, and I can get back into the swing of things in terms of just escaping through reading, which is what I used to do. But right now, it's my alarm clock.
We all go through cycles like that. I completely understand. And my team of readers inspires me too, because those times where I'm reading something that I might not be enjoying, and so I'm going slow or I put it down, they're like, oh, what'd you read this week, Mary Ellen? I'm like, oh, yeah, I should probably pick that back up again. So on behalf of the podcast team, I want to thank you both for joining us today. For another episode of NCIA On Location, speaking with us and sharing a little bit about yourselves and your projects. We want to thank you for all that you do in the child support community. Thanks to our listeners for joining us today. I'm Mary Ellen Keeley, and this has been NCIA On Location.
On Location is available on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you get your podcasts. We have a lot of great episodes on the way, so be sure to subscribe and listen to all of our previous episodes as well. We also appreciate your ratings, your feedback, your comments, and your suggestions. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us on the contact link on our website. On Location is a production of the NCIA Communications Committee, with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. Thanks again for joining me. I'm Tim Leitner, and this has been On Location.